You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
Well, you've asked for it, and we're back. I have returned for a second season, another year of big-name interviews with coaches, players, and legends that have made the Turkish Airlines EuroLeague exactly what it is today. Once again, I'll be getting down and dirty with these special guests and find out what life is all about for European basketball elite, both on and off the court. Stay tuned, and remember, no subject is ever out of bounds when you're on The Crossover. Oh man, this is going to be a lot of fun today. Welcome to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas, and I'm so happy that you downloaded this one or listening to this episode. I have in front of me one of the craziest stories you'll ever hear in the world of basketball. A guy that didn't touch a ball until he was 17 years old, one of the best defenders in the EuroLeague, and someone for the last couple of years I've kind of called the gentle giant, among other names, but I think the gentle giant part of him is slowly going away. I don't know why, but we'll ask him right now. Please welcome Walter Samuel Eddie Tavares to The Crossover. How are you, big man?
Great. Great to be here.
Everything good? I don't know how many, you got so many names, man. I don't know what to call you.
They call me everything.
Everything, no?
Yeah. In every team, I have some names.
I'm thinking about stopping to call you Gentle Giant because the last couple of games, man, you've gotten in a little bit of trouble with. you've had some issues.
I think it's the heat of the game when you're like, the game is super important with the great team, like EuroLeague. Every game is like, it's like a final. Sometimes you're going to lose your head and do something crazy.
You know, I think the craziest thing about it was two of the players that I would expect the least from, you know, like Kyle Hines is probably the nicest. Kyle, and I did Corey Hines 2 weeks ago before the Clásico, and the two of the nicest guys I've ever talked to, you know, and then got upset with you, who's one of the nicest guys I've ever talked to. So it's kind of strange. Are you getting lessons, like defensive lessons from Facundo Capasso? Because you seem to be bothering people now.
I don't know. I think it's a part of the game. Sometimes they feel it's like disrespectful. Sometimes they understand different, like some signal I do when I block shot or I do something.
This one, right?
Yeah. Like the crazy one.
Yeah.
And I think that's it. I just like to celebrate. I like to disrespect nobody and enjoy the game.
Yeah, I don't think you mean any harm by it. It's just part of the game. We all know that. I think they know that too. Because, you know, the same thing with you're excited about the play. Yeah. They're upset that, you know, that's not a good point of the game. You know, I called you Sergeant SWAT to begin with.
Everybody called me now.
Yeah, everybody calls you Sergeant SWAT. So we started that. I love the fact that we did that. You know, I love the fact that we did that. But when I do the games, there's like this talk back button. I don't know if you know what I mean exactly, but there's a button on the machine that I can talk to my producer directly. He either talks to me in my ear, and then I have to talk to him. So there's one game you had like three or four like block shots in a row, and I was going crazy, and I'm hitting the button. I said, I need a name for this guy, man. I need a name for this guy. And he comes back like 2 minutes later, and he's in my ear. He's like, call him Sergeant SWAT. Call him Sergeant SWAT. So I want everybody to know that's how your name actually, but you like it.
And now I know, I like it. It's a great name. I love it.
You sent me, because you don't just block shots, you actually SWAT. You like to SWAT them.
And they always say, the coach I had before, they always say, like, SWAT.
Yeah. They used to say that.
Yeah.
Oh, perfect.
They say, like, I do like a build. Just.
Well, you know, the old rule, Bill Russell, was you try to, like, just touch it, you know, and retain possession. But it's always good to SWAT, make it look a little bit better. But I got to say that because you sent me an article one time, I think, on Twitter or somewhere of a German newspaper that first used the word Sergeant SWAT. And I'm like, all right, it's official. But as I sit here in front of you, though, I have to say that I have gotten all the credit for that. Of course, you get the credit for being who you are and blocking the shots. But I got to give my credit to my producer, who's Chris Littleford, man.
And so, thank you. Thank you to him.
Good. Send out a thank you to Chris.
Something different. They stopped calling me Mutombo. I have my own name.
There you go. There you go. Let's go to hometown.
Yeah.
Cape Verde. I've never been there. Never been a place that I've thought about going. Let's say you didn't come play basketball and you're a travel agent. How do you sell me on a 2-week vacation to Cape Verde?
Well, I said like a like a humble place with like everybody's go like you say like go like 1 o'clock, they come like 3 because everything is like relaxing.
Oh, it's like Spain then. No, so you're at home in Spain.
No, I think Spain is a little bit better.
They come a little bit earlier, but still.
I think it's a nice place. You got a natural beach. You got happy people. People like to help you. You got a free tour because everybody want to be your friend. Everybody want to help you. Uh-huh. And I think that's a great part of Cape Verde, because everybody want to help each other. I think it's a humble place, and I think when the people discover that Cape Verde, they're gonna love it because it's super relaxed. You're gonna disconnect totally because it's like it's still virgin. Because
you sold me, man. You're selling me. But I'm not going unless you're there.
Hey, you gotta go when I'm there. You're gonna enjoy it.
The only thing I gotta practice is that dance, man. You got that dance down for a big man. I got you. We're dancing all. I was watching your videos. I'm like, man.
Since I was a kid, and in my home, they always music, and my grandpa, he always put music like 8 in the morning until 11 because he loved music. Just music everywhere. And when he goes to Cape Verde, it's music everywhere. Music every house. It's like, man, I can't stop hearing music. Everybody's super happy to hear.
Unfortunately, in this podcast, the crossover, they can't see you because I'm watching your faces light up, man. And when you talk about your home crunch, and it's beautiful because you have the big smile on your face, and what was a typical day for you like before this crazy thing happened here on 17? I mean, what you went to school, I'm assuming.
Yeah,
I beach all day.
Yeah, to beach all day because I have nothing to do there. Just go to the beach and that's it. And I think when I was in the school, I know I have to stop because my mom don't have time to rest. They have like this little bar in this.
It was a bar she had.
Yes, okay. She had a bar and little store, like mixed of everything. I was helping her because she's there like the whole day. And when I know I don't have time to study because I have to work because the school is on that time it don't help me. It's just trying to help my mom and
your dad was gone all the time, right?
Yeah, my dad is like 6 months
in the sea
and 6 months at home. So
how hard is that? That's got to be difficult.
Yes.
Number one, not to have your dad for 6 months, and then maybe number two, if I ask my kids to have their dad for 6 months, is difficult also. You know, because you get used to the life without him, and then he comes back into life and it's different for 6 months, then he goes again.
It's like there from my childhood, and he always come, and I was happy because he's in home. He's give me a lot of present when he come home, and I think that's the great part when he came. And I think my mom was trying to help my mom as possible as I can because she worked too hard. I know I have to help, and I was in the store. I was in the store every day, and the other part on the beach because we have nothing to do more than instead to go to the beach.
So it was like a supermarket type of store and a bar also attached to
it's
it.
It's like a mix.
Whatever needed to be done.
Yeah.
When did you know that you were tall? You know, like nobody really knows that they're tall. You know, like I grew like I was kind of the same size as like the couple of kids in my class, and then all of a sudden after like 4 summers I grew gradually. When did you just become like?
I think since I was a kid, everybody called me tall kid on the class.
What was your nickname? You had to have a nickname, right?
I don't remember now, but
it's Sergeant Swat, not that matter.
They always call me like the biggest guy in the school. When we play football, everybody's running away because I came like I play football too hard and kick everybody because I was.
Well, you know, I have written down in my thing. I said, there's no way he played football up to a certain point because players are like, no, I'm not gonna play with him anymore. He's too big.
When they see me running toward them, they left the ball and and go away because I was out of control and don't know how to play football. Just want to play with them. They put me on the defensive side and then they put me a goalkeeper.
And the goalie, of course.
They put me on the front.
Were you a good player though?
Well, I was good in the hit people. I think the defense was my best part because you have only to kick people and intimidate them.
I think one of the funniest parts of your story is this Joaquin guy who noticed you.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to go to this now. I guess he went to your mom's bar or store, and that's how he noticed you. I think the funniest thing I read, that he's a car salesman. You know the reputation that car salesmen have to begin with. In America, they always have the reputation of, like, selling you junk cars. Yeah. You know, like, you know, stealing your money, selling you a bad car, and then, you know. Yeah. When I heard that this guy was the guy who went back to Grand Canaries to sell you, I laughed. I said, a car salesman. No wonder why nobody believed him. Did you meet the guy?
Yeah.
But before you knew he was going back to the Canary Islands to talk to the agents, the people from the team, did you know he was going to do that? Did he sit down and talk to you first, or did he just say?
Yeah, just say, hey, you want to play basketball? I say yes, because everybody told me, stop playing football. You gotta play basketball because you're too tall. You just gotta grab the ball and make.
Yeah, of course. Everybody thinks it's that easy.
But I say then laugh. I say, yeah. Just say here to let him go away. I say, give me a picture with the normal people. I take a picture with one girl, like on my side, and that's it. He said, I go to Gran Canaria and talk to my friend because he knows somebody in, I have like a basketball school in Gran Canaria. You're gonna talk to them and you're gonna say something when you come.
What were you thinking? Were you thinking like this is a joke? Were you thinking this is like it's not gonna happen? You know, was your mom like, you know, don't believe this guy? I mean, there gotta be so many different things going through your mind.
Yeah, because I don't have nothing to do there. It's just one opportunity to do something to help my family. I was working like go to the beach every day. Have a church. Mm-hmm. I used to say in front of a church to say, God give me opportunities
really
to do something with my life because I don't know what to do.
But basketball was never something that you thought, typical thing that people tell a tall person. You should play basketball.
Yes, to play basketball is too easy, but it's not too easy.
You didn't watch basketball growing up, did you?
No, I didn't watch basketball. I remember watch sometimes like NBA action or something like that.
Like the highlights.
Yeah, the highlight and that's it. And
so you never even had like an idol basketball?
No. I know Michael Jordan because they have like jerseys and right. Shoes. Everybody know, but I don't know.
Nothing else?
Nothing else.
So what's the point from this process where Joaquin... Mm-hmm. I guess he went back, talked to Canary, the people in Canary, then came back to take the picture to prove to them that you were actually as tall as you were or whatever, and then went back. So what's this process now? Did you go, when they came with you, did you go straight back with them?
No, they already have plans to go to Cape Verde to visit.
But for you?
No, they already want to go to Cape Verde because one of them, they have his brother on Cape Verde.
They have a brother there.
Yeah, they work there. They say, okay, we're going to go and enjoy the islands and watch this kid and see what we can do with him.
We'll get to the tryout here in a bit, but were you nervous? I'm thinking like when I grew up playing basketball, if someone came and gave me a tryout, I'd be so nervous because I've been doing this all my life and working hard at it. And I got one tryout and I could mess up. What? You didn't even know what you were going to do.
No.
You have no idea what's going on.
Zero idea what I'm going to do. I don't know if I'm going to shoot the ball. I'm going to kick the ball. I don't know what I'm going to do. Just go and try my best and show them I want this opportunity to try to learn how to play basketball and that's it.
So you're supposed to meet up with them and you fell asleep.
Yeah.
Is this a true story?
They say I fell asleep, but I think I made a mistake and I go to the different door.
No, but that, I read that was later. I read first you were supposed to meet at some cafe.
Yes.
And you fell asleep and woke up after the meeting.
Yes.
What?
It's a Cape Verde style to go to.
It's like I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, because as I'm researching all this stuff, I'm thinking, all right, either he didn't really understand the opportunity, he didn't care about the opportunity, that's why he fell asleep, but you're an Islander.
I didn't know. they say come, and I don't know if they say come tomorrow or come today. I don't understand. I didn't.
How did you get there?
I get there the day before on the gym to meet them.
Okay, yeah. but you went by car? Someone drove you? Your mom, dad drove you?
I was in the home of my mom's friend.
Oh, okay.
It was close. I was walking to the gym.
Ah, okay. So then after you sleep through the meeting,
yeah,
and you don't show up, then you go back to the gym to meet them, yeah, and you're at another door and they're at the other side of the...
Yeah. I was in the back door.
Yeah.
They say, where are you? I don't know. I'm here and... On the front door.
I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, you're lucky that they didn't just say, forget this guy. He oversleeps. He doesn't show up for the thing. He doesn't really want to play.
Because they didn't tell me I fell asleep. They told the story before. I didn't know. they didn't tell me anything.
But when you're late for all this, are you thinking like, oh my God, I'm going to miss this opportunity? Or
yeah. I was nervous because...
You sit in front of the church every day asking for an opportunity. It comes and then you fall asleep. And
yeah. It was not intentional, but I could have missed the opportunity.
So you show up with a pair of sandals on, with a pair of flip-flops.
My half foot in and my half foot out to play basketball.
But did you know that you needed sneakers to play?
I don't know. I just show up and see if they have shoes or something because I don't have shoes. I don't have flip-flops in Cape Verde because all the shoes my father bring is always the size below. And
by the time they got back after 6 months, they were probably too small, right?
Yeah. Well, I missed opportunity again.
And the one thing I'm still having a tough time believing, you had a size 17 mm-hmm. shoe or 17 foot, I guess. And somehow or another, they went crazy and found something for you to practice in. First of all, the socks didn't fit you, yeah, from what I understand. Yeah, they cut the socks.
They gave me the football socks.
Football socks. They're really thin, like,
yeah,
thin, they don't even go over your toes, probably. No,
they cut it and my foot couldn't go through them.
Then they get a pair of shoes that are 13 and a half.
Yes.
I wear a size 14. Mm-hmm. And at this point, you're wearing a size 17. I can't imagine trying to get myself, my 14, into a size 11.
Yeah.
How does your foot actually get in? That's my biggest question. I mean, forget the obvious. Mm-hmm. How does your foot actually get in?
I don't know, man. I just want to put the foot and trying to do something and practice with them because... I have nothing else to do because they're trying to find the shoes everywhere. They can't find them. I think that's the only one shoe they have because everybody's stressed out to trying to find another shoes. And
how long did it take them to find the shoe for you?
I think about an hour or something to find the shoes. Shoes and socks. I think by like 2 hours to find everything.
And during this time, so they're just talking with you and like getting to know you and...
Yes.
Yeah. And when you finally get this shoe on...
Yes.
Of course it hurts.
Yeah.
But be honest.
I don't know. I don't have no breaks because I don't have time to stop. Just run.
Yeah. But
I have no...
Because I'm thinking if you do stop, you're falling.
Yeah,
because,
falling on my foot is like...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, crashing.
Because obviously your toes are all scrunched up, yeah, and you're in the thing. Mm-hmm. And how can you... I'm still... how can you even walk, let alone play basketball? I mean,
yeah, I think I was used to put small shoes. I think that's why the messed up my foot because I always used the small shoes.
Did you even own a pair of shoes then?
No,
and that own a pair of shoes that fit you.
I think the first time I used the shoes that fit me was like 17 when I get to Gran Canaria. Because they bring like a four pair of shoes, the different size,
right,
and try them all. And
so that's when you knew what your actual shoe size was.
That way I knew I love put shoes on. I was afraid to put the shoes on. I still got trouble with that because I always come to the practice with my flip-flops.
Oh, I know.
They all say... Why? It's like 20 degrees below or something.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
I'm from the Northeast in the States, and it's always cold, but I always went with flip-flops, too. Yeah. People look at you here like, what are you doing with flip-flops? It's freezing out.
It's nothing like flip-flops.
Yeah, it's the most comfortable. I don't like the flip-flops. I don't like anything between my toes, but I like the sandals.
I don't know how to put them.
Yeah. I mean, you've never seen, still to this point, you've never actually seen a basketball game on television.
No.
Up until this point. It's so crazy. I saw the Informant Robinson, you know, the Robinson Report, which is really a neat story about you. Did you really throw up a three right off the bat? Is that like when they went to practice with you, your first shot was a three-pointer?
They say shoot it, just throw it. I almost broke the rim or something. When they shoot the ball, I say, no, let's come and do some hook shots.
Was that the last time? Have you shot a three-pointer yet in the EuroLeague?
In Belgrade.
I think you have one.
Yeah, because Rudy says, shoot it. It was like 3 seconds left.
Right.
I don't want to make it because they're going to look bad. And they throw to the glass.
Oh, it's at the end of the game?
Yeah.
Oh, God. So that was your first 3-point. That was this season.
Yes.
Now you start doing drills. I'm imagining you're doing like what we called in the States the Mike and drill. Back and forth.
My first drill.
Your first drill was the Mike and drill, right? Yes. Is that they call it the Mike and drill also?
Yes.
And after like a few minutes, you start.
Yeah, my shoulders start burning, my neck, my foot. I don't know what to put the foot when I do like a mic and drill. It was like my foot is everywhere. I don't know what to do. Just it was like a simple drill, but right. For me it was hard. And to keep your hands high and do that for like 20 minutes or something, I was dying.
and so you asked for a rest.
Yes, and no, I didn't ask for a rest, but
you didn't ask for a rest, but
my neck and my shoulders started hurt so bad because I actually never do like a sport like a professional,
right.
Like a 1 hour or 2 hour.
Right.
I never did.
Especially
that.
With your hands over your head. If you're playing football the whole time, you're running with your arms down.
Yeah.
It's a whole different thing.
Yeah, it was hard.
And when it's all done and over with,
yeah.
the tryout, what do they tell you at that point? Did they say, yeah, come on, you're coming back to Canaries? Or did they just say, okay, we'll be in touch with you?
Yeah, they say they're going to give me like a 3 month try to go to Gran Canaria.
Right there, the same at that moment.
Yeah, at that moment, because they were super impressed with my feet, because I was like 215 or something like that.
And still growing?
Yes, and still growing. They say they're going to give me a chance to go to practice with them, and they got a much more better facility to do something there. And I go like for 3 months, and they come back to Cape Verde.
Did you know where it was?
Huh?
Did you know where it was? Gran Canaries?
Yeah.
You knew
it? No.
You didn't know where it was?
I didn't know how to use a computer before to get there.
So how long between the tryout and then you jump on a plane to go to
Gran Canaria?
To Gran Canaria.
I think 3 months, no more. I think like a 6 months because the visa, they make the paper to make a visa. I think they deny it. We do that again. Then they put me like a visa because I was like, no, they're not going to call me. Right. They're not going to call me to go again to Gran Canaria because it's super hard to get a visa to go because in Cape Verde, you know, when the people have like, people don't have no job, people don't have nothing to do with this. If they get a visa, they go, they never
come back.
They never come back. And so it's hard for the people who want to go and do something.
So you were rejected by your own country?
Yes.
To go.
And then Gran Canaria sent like a paper to say he's going to come and try to play basketball and the Federation of Basketball in Cape Verde, and they helped too, and then they put me a visa to go to Gran Canaria.
And you were, what, so this is 6 months later, five, 6 months later, you were 17 still at that time, or now you turned 18?
I was 17 to turn 18.
To turn 18.
Yeah.
You get on this, you get the visa, you go. First of all, what are your mom and dad thinking? Was your dad in town at that time, or was he?
No, my dad was not. He don't want me to go there because I was by myself.
That's my big question. You know, that's my big for your mom and dad. Because I have three kids.
Yeah,
and I'm like, you know, one thing is if I see the opportunity for my kids, but we all have other opportunities. You didn't have any other opportunity, but it'd be my father back in the day. The first time I was sent to Hawaii for like a pre-NBA draft tournament, I called him and told him.
Yeah,
he's like, no, he's like, they're lying to you. He's like, there's no way this is it. He's like, they're going to pay for your ticket. And I'm like, yeah, they're going to pay for my ticket and give me money. Yeah. He's like, they're lying to you. Don't believe anybody. So I have to think the same thing, you know?
It was the same thing with my father. He was not believing like, an opportunity to go to Gran Canaria and then pay me everything and give me like food and everything to go and try play basketball. Because
these things don't happen to people in Cape Verde.
No, they don't happen normally in Cape Verde.
That's the crazy thing. So, I mean, I understand where your parents would be and your mom is probably like, hey, I don't have any help at the store. I need you at my store, right?
Yeah.
Just gonna have to get an employee.
Yeah.
So you get there, you went all by yourself.
Yeah, by myself.
Oh, I mean, how hard is that? Seriously, how difficult was that? I mean, you know there's something waiting for you.
Yeah.
But no family.
No friends.
No friend. The way I see you integrated within the culture of Cape Verde. Mm-hmm. It makes me think that, you know, yeah, people could look at it and say maybe it's poor. It's not, you know, Gran Canaria is going to be a bigger step up in life. But you're used to what you're used to.
Yes.
You could bring you to New York City. You could bring you to California. You love your hometown.
Yes.
How is that to be there alone? I mean, you're not alone because there's people around you, and you know they're gonna take care of you. But it's not the same as having family there.
No, it's not the same because first of all, you go there, and then people expect you to do something. I don't have nothing to offer. I was there to try to play basketball, and that's it. And when I start practicing with them and do some individual workout, there's some people say they only bring you because you're too tall. You're not gonna succeed because you have a lot of problem. Because when I go there, I have a blood problem.
Right.
I have a lot of problem. I don't know how to how to walk.
Right. Yeah.
Because I have no coordination. I have probably zero power on my body because I was super skinny.
But the things people are telling you are true.
Yes.
it's not like they're trying to take you down. They're the truth. So mentally, what does that do? Does that make you? Is that making you like want to be more? Just go for it more, or is it like kind of take you down a little bit? You have to spend times in your room just.
Yeah, just think and cry and call my mom, and my mom is super positive. My mom is always you're gonna get through it. You gotta work hard and forget the people and keep going and do whatever it takes to stay there. And if it's not possible, it's not possible. If it's for you, it's for you. If it's not for you, it's not for you. But try your best and do your best and see what they can do with you. But you gotta keep going and try your best, but it's hard because you know people say something negative.
Of course.
The people like better than you and play basketball because they dominate. They play basketball since 2 years old.
Yeah.
I don't have all the formation from the kids.
Yeah,
it's hard because you have to learn everything fast. It's super hard.
It's like you said. People say because you're tall.
Yeah.
It's you know that's the reason why you got the break. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
If you were 6'3" or 6'4" or you know 1.90 meters, and Joaquin saw you on Cape Verde, he wouldn't look twice at you as a basketball player.
Yes.
Your height. But my thing is, it's more difficult for someone your size to become coordinated, to figure out how to play this game because it's so much work.
People don't know that.
Yeah. I mean, us as basketball players, you know that. Because yeah. I think to myself, I'm like, it's impossible. You know, most of your story. Did you speak Spanish before you got to Spain? Or because you're more of a Portuguese.
Yeah. I think they helped me because the Portuguese and Spanish like kind of the same. And they helped
But you didn't speak Spanish when you got there at first.
No. I can understand, but I cannot talk. And the boss of the basketball academy, they say, you have to say only yes and no. I was saying yes to everybody. I was saying, see, what?
You see what? What am I saying, see, dude? No? Sometimes, like, what I was learning, you learn the mannerisms, you know, the way people speak to you. Then you say, if it's positive, I say, see. If it's negative, I'm like, okay, yeah. No.
I will say yes to everything.
How many times did you think about quitting and going back home, honestly?
I think every practice, every end of the practice we did in Gran Canaria for like, I think for 3 months or 6 months, and like the whole year, I want to quit because...
Every day.
Because it was super hard, and the people, they always expect me to give. Because on that time I don't have nothing to give. I was there to try my best to do something, but I don't know what is the best to do in basketball. You know,
because I mean, you have no clue.
And I have nothing. I don't have what to do. I don't have if I have to get a 20 rebound to help the team win. I don't know if I have to make a 20 points is positive. I don't have if I block 20 shot is a positive thing for the team.
Right.
I don't have no clue what is the positive thing to do to help them. I was there to do something.
Whatever. But no, you didn't know.
Yeah, I was in process.
I laugh because I coach the American school here in Pozuelo, and I get kids. Some of them are good players, and they come out to play. A lot of them have never played before in their life, you know, and they come to me, and I always forget. Like, we have quick practices, then games start right away. And I always forget, like, as soon as the game starts, they don't remember that. They don't know that they have to take the ball out of bounds after the basket scored. They don't know where to line up in the fight. You were the same.
Same thing.
You had no idea.
I have no idea. No idea. I was making a lot of mistakes. And everything, the whole mistake you think in basketball, I did that before.
You did them all.
I did them all.
Well, the first time you played, I mean, I'm sure you didn't go there and play 5-on-5 right away. It was all technical, individual stuff, I assume.
In Cape Verde, we did a 5-on-5 on my first tryout. I was in the middle of the...
I saw that video.
In the middle of the court. I was like two steps to the defense, two steps to the offense.
But I saw that. Was that the day of the shoes, the 13 and a half shoes?
Yeah, we did everything on that. Yeah.
And you ran full court.
I didn't pass the court. I was like,
I know, I saw you just go back and forth.
Go back and forth because the kids is like running around everywhere.
Sometimes it's what you do.
I was like looking around what I'm doing.
Sometimes it's what you do now, though. You said pick, you go back. You said pick, you go down.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes you look around the same as like the Cape Verde days. But the first time you like did 5-on-5 game, like when you really knew what you were doing now, not really knew what you were doing because maybe you're 18 or 19 at the time and you're still working out. Were you nervous? Were you like 5-on-5? Again, you don't know what they're asking of you.
Yeah, I was nervous because you have to remember the plays that you practice on the day before.
I didn't even think about plays.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about plays.
The plays is the most hardest thing to do. Because your mind is not prepared for that, because the kids, they come from they play basketball since they are kids. They know some plays. Their mind is like prepared to do that in the game on the pace of the game and react quick to the plays. I was like, I can't do this because you forget, because you're like super nervous and you have to make a decision right away when your mind is like nothing to it's like
you have 30 things on your mind and you don't know which one is
which one is the is the call, which one is a horn, which one is the two up, two down. And the point guard start looking around, looking at you like with his eyes open, like,
get in your position.
Get in your position. What is my position?
You know, the next game I commentate, every time I see Facundo come down and do like a two side, or I'm gonna laugh. I'm gonna watch you, see if you know where you're going.
Yeah. And now I know, because when I was in NBA, it was like, and like go to the D League and play somewhere. Yeah. You gotta learn fast the plays. I think they helped me a lot.
What was the hardest part of the adjustment, of the change of your life? What do you think was the hardest, the most difficult part? Because you had so many different things: basketball, culture, society, food, friends, family. I mean, I could go down the line and then, you know.
Everything.
But what do you think was the number one thing that made you sit in your room and cry at night? And
I think you feel like you try your best, but you can do like something positive, you know. You just try and try, and you feel like I don't know. You feel like no result. It's hard because you feel like what I have to do, to make them proud, to say, oh, this guy can get better. This guy can improve. This guy in 2 years, on 3 years, he's gonna be better. But it was not like that. It was like every time when I practiced with, I was practicing with a lot of teams, with the junior, with the third, I think the fourth division of Ebas, and junior A, junior B, and everybody. And like some coaches, they are laughing because they see me on the court, they're like, this guy can play basketball. You see the people laugh because of your mistake. When you play like a shoot around or something like that with two people, nobody want to go with me because they know they're going to lose. So when you like three men transition,
I
was messed up everything.
The three man weave.
Everybody was like, oh,
nobody
shit.
Nobody knows that right off the bat, so don't worry. That's always a hard one.
Yeah. They say, oh, he gonna fuck this up. Everybody was more nervous than me because they know I'm gonna make a mistake because it was hard. But for me on that time, now I'm laughing because I know everybody can make a mistake. It's something normal in basketball.
But you get those mean coaches that if you make a mistake, they make the whole team run sprints too. So no one wants to be.
Yes.
But no one wants to be.
And everybody's mad. Yeah. Like, you got to do this right.
So. You originally declared for the draft in 2013, but didn't go. Yeah. You only played 118 real games before you were drafted in 2014. You declared. Why did you withdraw from 2013? Just you weren't ready, or?
I feel like I can go back and play better and go there and see if I can get more ready to go.
But you only play like another 30 games after that. Yes. You know, the next year you played 30, I think 32 that year or something.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that much. You had one more year of practice, obviously.
Yeah.
But 2014, you go. When? Sometimes it's hard for me to ask the questions because I'm amazed by your story. When did you say, like, I'm going to be in the NBA draft? I just did this like 4 years ago. What are you guys, crazy? Who's proposing that I asked to go to the NBA draft? I mean, I still don't know the three-man weave, and you're sending me to an NBA draft.
Yeah, I think when I play in Malaga, I think against Real Madrid, when I play like great game against them. Mm-hmm. But we lost for sure because the Real Madrid is too good, and I think there when they started to look at me and send the people to watch me play, and on that year I started playing a little bit more better and started learning. I have a Pedro Martinez, Aito, and they helped me a lot with something and make basketball easy for me. They helped me a lot. Because Pedro Martinez say, "You wanna be NBA? Wanna be NBA player?" He give me like one paper, and say, "Put everything you wanna learn, I can blank piece of paper. Yeah, blank piece of paper and and draw everything and say, I want to learn this, I want to learn that. I have to be focused. I have to play better low post. I have to be more aggressive. He say, do that and bring it to me. I can make it happy for you. I say, okay, I'm going to do that. And I did. And everything went
well. How long did it take you to fill that paper out?
A lot, because I was super nervous.
Right. I can imagine, like, you give me a piece of paper, I don't know what I need to do.
Yeah.
That's why you're the coach, you know? Yeah.
They say, put whatever you have on your head, whatever you say or you think you have to get better. We have our opinion, but I need you to put everything on the paper and give it to me. We're going to work and we're going to help you together.
And but a year later, you're in New York City.
Yeah.
Crazy. Never been in New York City before, I assume.
No.
What did you think?
It's crazy. Everybody's going fast. Everybody's bumping each other. Everybody's not bumping me because I was right. Tall. But everybody, you know, American people, is like, they are open. They can talk to you like they know you from.
And that's New York City is one of the coldest places too. People don't talk that much. If you're in California, it'd be different. But in New York City, people just kind of go about their business. Yeah. But you being so tall, I always talk to people, like, I can't imagine what it's like for you. We'll go back to New York City in a minute, but I walk in the bars here or restaurants here and people are like, man, you're so tall. I can't imagine what it's like for you because I'm just a normal person, you know, at 2'4". Yeah. For you, I say to them, can you imagine if I walked into this restaurant and I looked at, like, this guy over here that's, like, 170. And I said, man, look how small you are. You know?
I want to do that.
Yeah, I know. But why isn't it socially acceptable that we do that?
Oh, yeah.
But it's socially acceptable for some, you know, short person to come up to us and look at us like we're abnormal.
Yeah, I think when you go to the a restaurant or something, everybody's on the table. You see everybody look at the door. Who's in? You know? Everybody looking back. Everybody just, why are you looking back? Everybody's looking at you
And it doesn't matter now that you're a Real Madrid player. I mean, they were looking at you before you ever played basketball. It didn't matter.
It doesn't matter. But sometimes I don't have to be on the light. I like to be by myself, but right. It's hard.
It is hard, but did you grow up with that complex?
I was super timid. Right. It doesn't matter for me, but I'm like that. It's like super timid. I don't like to be on the light. Right. I don't like to be by myself. And
plus, in your island, everybody knows you, so it's no big deal.
Yeah, everybody knows me. My family is tall. I have a lot of uncle and everybody's tall. My family, and it was comfortable for me, but. It's like that. I got to live with that.
So now number 43 you're drafted.
Yeah.
Number 43. First Cape Verdean, obviously, has ever drafted in the NBA. Yeah. You're like a country hero now. I mean, you go to New York. Was your family there in New York? Was your mom there?
No.
You were there with the people from Canary?
From Canary, yeah. They surprised me on the day.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
So you were there alone first in New York?
Yeah, I was there with my agent.
With your agent.
And then they come alone on that day.
And you actually went to the draft.
Yes.
Which is kind of cool. Did you work out for teams beforehand?
Yeah, I think I did like 10 workouts or 8, I don't remember.
Did you have an idea of more or less when you were going to go in the draft? Did some do, you know, because there's always rumors. People say, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, but that always changes also.
Oh, yeah, because they always do that. A lot of teams told me that they're going to pick me, we're going to do something and pick you. And because on that day on the draft, I didn't know where to go, where I'm going to go because... And they change the idea every minute, every second. I don't know.
Were you excited?
I was excited, but I was nervous because when the time came, when they called me, I was like, finally.
You have 43. That's a long wait.
Yeah.
That's a long wait.
I was sitting there for a long time.
Did you think that maybe you weren't going to get drafted at one point, that you were going to have to become a free agent?
Yeah, I was thinking like that, but I was always positive and... If it's not happened, what I'm going to do? Just keep going.
Yeah, of course. Well, I mean, your contract, mm-hmm. I'm not going to ask you how much, but it had to be cool to sign this contract with an NBA team.
I was like, to go there, and I have team to call me to play in Europe. I was deciding where I'm going to go.
Right. But you came back after that, the draft. You came back for one more year and played here. And then your experience in the NBA was not a good one.
Yeah, well, it was not a good one because the general manager from Atlanta loved me. He wanted me to go there and play, but the coach was not.
Who was the coach at the time?
Van Hoser.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He was not like me like that much, but the general manager did like me, but the coach didn't like me that much. But I was there. This was like an experience. I learned a lot. I was there. I think I'm working hard here, but there they work more harder than more harder than everybody else. Everybody's like is like to wait for the opportunity to shine. It's like a competitive mind every time, every practice, everything is like competitive because it's hard.
When you go over there now, you're alone again.
Yeah.
In America, in Atlanta. Atlanta's okay weather. It's not a bad place, but it's you're still alone again.
Yeah.
Another difficult adjustment because, I mean, America is not Spain either.
No.
You know, and that's a whole different situation.
Yeah.
And you're not playing that often.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden they send you all over the place.
Yes.
You go, let's see, I got it written down here. You go from Texas to Ohio to Arizona.
Everywhere.
To Canada, back to Ohio.
American tour.
American tour with Canada involved.
Yeah.
How does a Cape Verdean... Mm-hmm. Beach going, how am I going to say this? Flip flop wearing, sandal wearing guy at 7'3" go to Canada. It's freezing, man. I'm from up there. I'm from upstate New York. It's freezing.
Yeah, it's cold.
How was it? Because you went, Ohio's cold enough, but you went Texas, Arizona also when you played with these G League teams. What was Canada like? I mean, did you have a jacket?
Oh yes, I will have a jacket.
Well, you had to buy one. You didn't go with one, I don't think, did you? You probably had one in Ohio, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was not that cold on that time when I played in Ohio. But in Toronto, yes. In Toronto, you see like a sun like this, and you go take a nap and wake up, and it's like a, it's like everything is messed up.
I'm from Rochester. It's straight across Lake Ontario.
Yes.
You know, it's straight, so we get the same weather as Toronto. It's crazy with the wind and the snow and everything else.
But it was great because the people are super nice. The people
it's a beautiful city.
Yeah.
So clean. And
so clean. They have great people there. People want to help you. The people from every country, every culture. It was I think it was one of the greatest places I
had. That was with the Raptors, right? The Raptors 905.
Raptors 905, yeah.
And then you went back again because you went to Cleveland. Explain to me how you go to Cleveland, play one game. Mm-hmm. Play 24 minutes.
Yeah.
Score 6 points, 10 rebounds. You get 6 block shots and that's it.
Because I get injured on the practice because somebody hit me on my hands and I had like a fracture in my hands and I think that messed me up.
And then they never gave you a chance to come back and play after that?
No, because when they told me I'm going to, next year, they're going to give me a lot of opportunity to play and they love me and they see me, I can learn more, I can get better, I can help the team win and everything. But when Kyrie even decided to leave, it was like they messed up everything because when the Kyrie leave, they bring another big man.
Who left?
Kyrie Irving.
Ah, okay, yeah, okay.
When you go to the Boston.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, when he left and they bring I think you know him, Zizic.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Yeah, Zizic was under contract. My was not guaranteed. They told me
that's the business of the NBA.
Yeah, they told me we love you, we appreciate you. If you want to go to the Canton and the G League to stay there like a month or the whole season, the next year we can give you a contract or something like that. But I don't want to go to the league, D League again, because it's hard. Basketball is good, but beside of basketball, it's hard to.
That's not playing basketball. And there's so much more to go with that. The travel and the schedule.
Six in the morning, I play back to back and fly 3 in the morning, sleep the whole day and go straight to the game and play.
You fly if you're lucky.
Yes.
You fly if you're lucky. If not, you're in the bus the whole time.
Yes, the bus everywhere. The whole time, yeah.
But so were you torn with Europe at that time in your mind? Were you thinking, I want to go back to Europe and play?
Yeah, because I don't want to go to the D League on that time. I was hoping to play there and wait till somebody call me up, but it's like you don't know if they're going to call you, if they're going to call you when the season is over again. I think it was super hard for me to play there. Obviously, I was happy in Toronto to play there, but I was not happy. I just want to play and enjoy and play the high level and enjoy my workout. I put it on and put on a core and enjoy with my teammates. I don't know.
But this time you don't really have teammates because you've been on 5 different teams. You never feel like family.
I never feel family. Yeah.
So then you get Real Madrid gets in touch with you, obviously.
Yes.
And you decide to come back. They're full of injuries. You had Gustavo Ayón went down. Anthony Randolph goes down. Yui goes down. Kuzmic. Yeah. Everybody goes down. And you show up. Again, we're talking about you've been so fortunate and so lucky in your lifetime. This is another moment. Not that you wouldn't have gone to another team. You could have, obviously come back to another Zaragoza, which, they're all good teams to go to. Mm. But do you think if Real Madrid doesn't go through all these injuries, they call you?
And they always look at me, but there was nothing serious. But I don't know. Like my mom say, with something's for you, it's for you. So I make the decision to come back to Madrid because I say I'm not going to the G League. I'm going to come here, and I'm going to stay here 1 year. Maybe if I do better here, I can go back. I can go back there. But that was my idea, to go back, come back, and to go back again.
So that my question was, what do you think you'd be doing now if they didn't call you?
I think I will stay in G League and wait until the next season or somebody to call me up or something.
You showed up here.
Yes.
And because of your character, because of the type of person you are, you can see that you were very tentative. You came into a team that's been together since training camp. Yeah. You just looked nervous when you first came here. You looked out of place. Yeah. I think, does that have something to do with your personality? Because you knew there's a guy like Felipe Reyes, all these guys that have been here for so long. Was it difficult for you to make that transition to the team?
It was not difficult because Felipe is welcoming with the open hand, Sergio Llull, everybody. I think when the first day I was here, I was super comfortable because everybody want to help me. Everybody want to make me adapted fast, and coaches and everything. Everybody's here is great people. I think that would make easy to adapt it.
So, I mean, you obviously fit in. Yeah. Obviously. So let's go. We go Gran Canarias, La Palma, Atlanta, Texas, Arizona, Ohio, Canada twice. And now you're back in Europe and you're with Real Madrid. And you go on this title run, you get to the Final Four, and you're sitting in Belgrade.
Yeah.
What are you thinking, man? Like, you're in the Final Four. I mean, are you going back and when you lay down at night and you go to bed and you think like, man, I was 5 years ago, I just started doing this, and I'm going to be playing tomorrow for the European Championship.
Yeah, it was crazy because when I have a friend in Gran Canaria, we were roommate. He was put like music off of EuroLeague before the game started.
Devotion.
Yeah, he was putting that music because he said he loved that music.
Gets me jacked up before the game. I can't imagine you guys.
Yeah. You say the music make him motivate. He was putting the music like every day to, I don't know why he put music every day, but I think I was. I was lucky because I say to don't know how to play basketball and get to the Final Four and get to the final and win it. Yeah, I was like a lot of people who was here like for I don't know for how many years they want nothing in EuroLeague and play. I think his whole life in EuroLeague to trying to get to the Final Four and get there and win in my first
in your first year.
Because I was like crazy. I was screaming. I think for 2 days or for 1 day or something like that. But it was hard to believe because he's. Is something amazing. I never experienced that feeling before because I was saying I'm not gonna win because it's my first time.
Right, that's how most people think.
Yeah, saying I'm not gonna win because I always win things from the hard way.
Yeah,
every time when we won, I was like surprised. And today I see the picture of the final of the celebration. I was like, oh, that's amazing.
Do you ever connect that picture of the championship with you holding the cup or you hugging the cup with that, you know, that first workout you had where your shoulders were burnt out and you know, you couldn't do anything? Do you connect those 2 days ever together in your mind and go, what am I doing here?
Yes.
How often do you think that?
I think that every time when something good happened to me on the basketball court or like what you say, we won the EuroLeague, like everything comes to my head and I say, I'm lucky.
I'm lucky. Blessed, man.
I'm blessed.
Crazy.
I'm blessed to get it and win and to know how to play basketball and come to the EuroLeague. And it's like one of the hardest competition to win, and everybody is a champion in their country and come and win is hard.
And now you've essentially found a home. You've signed a long-term deal in the year after, unfortunately, you get the, unfortunately for you and the team, you get the opposite feeling. You get to get to the Final Four.
Yeah,
and you guys have a lead in the third quarter of the semifinal game.
We were close.
Yeah, and you didn't get it. What's that feel like? Because now you've had all the experiences. Now you've gone through the buffet of experiences. You've got to pick from each plate, you know, and you got the bad one. Yeah. What's that like for? I mean, are you still very appreciative of where you are, or I mean, at the moment it's so difficult. When especially if you've won that first one, you get you're addicted to that. That feeling. What was it like when you guys lost that semifinal game to Cheska?
It was hard because we started the game great. We started and play like we like to play and run and score everything. And I was blocking everything on the first quarter. And everybody was hype. Everybody like feel like we're gonna do something great, but you know basketball. Sometimes when you go down for 1 minute, exactly. they up there or they twenty point.
Yeah,
it was hard, but we lose against. We're gonna say that, but we lose against the champion.
Yeah,
that's the thing. You gotta say positive because if we won them, we're probably gonna win the EuroLeague. But
it's hard to repeat. It's hard to go back to back in this league. It's crazy.
It's hard. We know it's hard, but we say we're gonna try our best and enjoy the moment, and that's it. But we know it's.
I thought you had a chance last year to repeat. I felt like if you got into the finals, you matched up well, probably against Efes also. But it happens. So you had the high and the low of basketball, but it's still worth it, isn't it? No matter what.
Yeah, still gonna learn something.
We meet up with the guys from Canaries all the time. I kind of noticed that you did some vacations with them, and things like that's kind of neat. Yeah. All these guys. I checked out your Instagram page. I usually see your stories, but I checked out your Instagram page, and it's just kind of a normal Instagram page. It's good. It's got all your athletic stuff, the game stuff. Of course, my favorite part of your Instagram is when I'm commentating on your games, and you put the videos on there. That's my favorite part. But some of the stories that you do, I don't. They're crazy. Who are you? The one doing your Instagram stories?
Yeah,
is that you? What are they? Sometimes I don't even know what. Like, you can't even tell what you're taping or what you're doing.
Yeah, it's boring. Boring.
No, it's not boring. It's interesting, but no one knows. I'm like, what is that? All of a sudden, you see like five people in the car doing something. I'm like, what are they doing?
It was the music. Made me crazy.
Music makes you crazy.
Yeah.
I saw the pic. I've had the pleasure of meeting your wife, yeah. and I saw the pics of you guys getting married. Tell us in the crossover about her. Where did you guys meet? And where's she from? Where'd you meet? All the good stuff.
Yeah, we met in Gran Canaria because she used to be I think she used to be a ref before, but she been in the basketball for a long time.
Also, she tells you what to do. Also, like when you play bad, does she tell you?
Yeah,
she tells. Really?
Yeah,
that's the worst, man.
Yeah, that's the worst.
Because you have to listen to her.
Yeah, I have to listen. I was mad every time when she told me, "Shut up! I don't want to hear no more."
What kind of things would she tell you? Like you didn't go to the rebound enough, you didn't play hard enough.
And no, she always told me about the free throw. You say, if you miss the free throw, I'm gonna kick you in the head. Every time when I go shoot free throws, I remember her face.
That's pretty funny. I didn't write that down, but I was thinking about it. Like, you shoot well from the free throw line for your size. All these people like Shaq and all those guys that say, my hands are too big. Like, you don't believe that. I mean, you got big hands and you shoot the ball well from the free throw line.
Yeah.
Of course, that's because you see your wife's face. Is she like up on the backboard?
She make the miracle. I have the pressure to make them.
So how did you propose to her? Because you guys just got married, what, a little like over a year ago? This past summer, the summer before, right?
Yeah.
What'd you do? Tell me. Like, so far, Jason Granger had the best proposal of ever. I'm still looking on my podcast for a better proposal. How did you propose her? Was it romantic? Was it on your island?
No, mine is a normal. Mine is like in one park and put my knees down and say, her, if you want to get married with me, because she hold me down for when I go to the D-League and NBA travel.
She was there with you the whole time.
She was there with me the whole time. She suffered more than me. She cries for me. She do everything for me. And I just have to play basketball and that's it, because the other part, she do everything.
She takes care of everything.
She don't want me to do anything. She always help me. She always on the positive side. The bad things you can talk bad about me. when she close to it, I have to talk bad about me.
But she could talk bad about you, but if someone else listens, she defends you, huh?
She go crazy. Yeah. You can't do that.
Here's the big question. My mom was an Italian, like big Napoletana and everything. She passed away, I don't know, about 7-8 years ago now.
Yeah.
And I always think of her when I do these interviews with a new couple, because, you know, the Italians, they want kids, man. They want kids, kids, kids. Yeah. So I always think of my mom, like, she'll kill me if I don't ask you, like, are kids in the future? Are we thinking kids? Are we having, I mean, you got two dogs, right?
Yeah.
Is that enough for now, or we got the real kids coming?
Is that enough for now? I think the kids maybe in a couple of years and 2 years and in 3 years, but we got to take time and think about it and do that on the right time.
There you go. Yeah. That was the first politically correct answer you gave, man.
Because sometimes they come like, you don't know, a surprise, but you gotta
you don't want surprise kids.
No, I don't want
you don't want surprise kids.
No, I don't want surprise kids.
If there's surprise kids with your wife, it's okay.
Yeah,
it's okay. Yeah. Not only surprises.
That surprise is okay.
How often do you get back home to see your family?
I try to go every year because I have to go and see my family and be in my country. And now I have to stay same guy and same humble guy, same
gentle giant.
Yeah, gentle giant. And I think I go to Cape Verde. They bring me to the beginning and to start a new season. I think Cape Verde is perfect place to go and to come with an open mind and trying to learn different things and keep moving forward.
How special is your country to you?
I mean,
you can tell just by the look in your face and the way you talk about it. And
my country is one of the things that most motivate me to promote them, because the people are super humble, people want to work, people want to do something with their life, but they don't have freedom to do because they always deny the visa, they always deny everything when you want to do something. But I always trying to represent my country the better I can, and trying to with my flags, I don't know, maybe 10 times more or 5 times more when we win.
We're home for titles.
We're some more EuroLeague to promote better. And that's it.
You do a camp also now, right? Yeah. In the summertime?
Yeah, I do camp there. And I did this summer. The first day was like a 90 kids.
90 kids, good. Yeah. That's good.
And the next day come like 120, and the next day they come 150.
Like a word of mouth, everybody's talking.
Yeah. Everybody come because they had a free shirt. Everybody want to play basketball, get free shirt and some candy, some juice. It was fun because they have people with want to do something, want to enjoy that moment. That's why I'm going to go there and do better and do for 1 week, because I did for 3 days and like see the kids' faces. Some of them are sad. They don't want me to leave. They want me to keep doing. But,
of course.
Maybe one day we can find some coaches there or somebody who wanna work with them and keep with them like for 1 year or something like that.
And I'm always available for a summer camp, you know.
Thank you.
You want to bring me and show me your. I read in Twitter and all that you've done something with Gigantes.
Gigantes.
Explain that. What they give balls or something to your camp or?
I visit Gigante camp and then. I was impressed with like how they work with the kids, mm-hmm. and I told them if they can help us with some material, but we don't have money, we don't need money, we need materials, we need something to kids to play basketball, and that's it. We don't have money. We need only material and some shirts or something just material to bring to the kids, and they give me a lot of balls, a lot of boxes. And they send it to Kiva, and the kids were happy. The federation was happy. They have like a little school in Kiva. They give them the ball. They give it some cones and
perfect.
They were super happy. Just
little things,
but they were happy. They don't. Every time when I call them, they always say thank you, and I talk to them, but then don't say anything. Just thank you. That make me happy and make me to find some people to help us to grow basketball, because the only sport is the football.
Right, of course.
I'm going to try to make, if it's basketball, it's second favorite, and to make people learn. And
so you just want to keep giving back to your country if you can.
Give, we don't need the money. We need only materials, and from there we're going to see somebody who want to play basketball, somebody who can play basketball, and mm-hmm. and bring them to Spain or to somewhere.
Samuel, Walter, Eddie, Sergeant SWAT. Call them what you want to call them. I appreciate your time here with my listeners on the Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. And after talking to you, I've already known you well enough over the years. And after talking to you today, I'm still going to call you the Gentle Giant. I don't care what they're saying about you these days, man. I don't care how mean
you've
been.
Only two games.
It's only two games. If he keeps going, then you're going to get that reputation. So yeah. Be careful. Sergeant SWAT, appreciate it. Thank you for being here, man.
Thank
Congratulations,
you.
Congratulations, and thanks a lot, and good luck this season.
Thank you to bring me here.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode, and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.